$1 billion a day. Oil prices up 27% in a week. You've got the president wanting a $1.5 trillion defense budget in 27.
Best money ever spent. Was it worth to America to take down a religious Nazi regime?
But there's not enough money for under this Republican government is you. There's not enough money for you.
Right. No, there isn't. And by the way, Lindsey Graham, which religious Nazi regime?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Just asking.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-round swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. All right, before we get going, we got a lot to get to, plus your calls if you would like to ring in on our if you're listening in our live Southern California listening area, we are, as ever, 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735. But before we get to all of that today, just a quick note. This is the time of year, each year, when we take just a moment to recognize pretty much the only thing worth crediting the GOP-run Congress during the George W. Bush administration for, and that's right, expanding the length of daylight savings time, changing the clock earlier in the year, and then again later in the year to give us all more sunlight in the evening, kicking off early what I always like to regard as the very, very unofficial start of summer. But I am happier this year than ever to start getting there. So thank you, Republicans, under George W. Bush, for largely the only damn thing we can thank you for. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
Are you thankful today?
I would not say I am thankful for daylight savings time in particular, but it's funny that you say it's the unofficial kickoff for you for summer, because
yeah,
it's been really, really hot here in Los Angeles. It's been a weird heat wave of, 88, 90 degrees.
It's almost like this. There's sort of this like global, I don't know what to call it.
A warming thing going on.
I don't really know.
We should maybe have scientists look into that.
If you, I hear the science is still out on that. If you if you disagree, by the way, about daylight savings time because you don't like it, well, you are welcome to call and tell me why I'm wrong at 818-985-5735. And, of course, I will return the favor in kind. That out of the way, some of the little bit of good news that we can offer today, and this case from a story we've been covering quite a bit since Trump's ill-fated return to office last year. A federal judge over the weekend ruled that Carrie Lake unlawfully led the U.S. Agency for Global Media, or USAGM, for several months last year and voided mass layoffs and other actions taken during the period to dismantle the agency. USAGM was created by Congress as an independent federal agency that oversees the beloved Voice of America, the U.S.'s largest and oldest international broadcaster. And it provides grants in addition to VOA. It provides grants to Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Radio Free Asia, the Middle East Broadcast Networks, and among many others around the globe, each of which has been involved in separate litigation against Carrie Lake and the agency over all of this. The Trump administration moved to defund the agency entirely in early 2025. It appointed Lake, a former local news anchor in Phoenix, a twice-failed candidate for statewide office there, and, of course, an election denier. She was tapped to oversee the agency, but she did not receive Senate confirmation for her role. NPR first reported in depth last August on questions about the legality of Lake taking on the title at USAGM and the powers of the agency's self-declared acting chief executive. According to NPR's David Folkenflik, the judge's ruling represents an absolute rebuke to the Trump White House and especially to Lake and her inner circle. It follows a series of courtroom exchanges in which the judge in this case, Judge Royce Lamberth, has found the government's arguments that Congress had no role to play in the future of the agency and the network unconvincing, and called Lake's credibility into question from the bench. Can you imagine that, Desi Doyen? Carrie Lake's credibility called into question?
Over and over again.
Last summer, in fact, he threatened her with contempt of court. Despite efforts to defund the agency, Congress, in fact, appropriated $500 million more this year than Lake had requested in funding for the agency for 2026, as she sought to seek just enough money, essentially, to largely pretend that she was keeping the doors open in order to meet the mandates of federal law. In her role, she cut contracts for more than 1,000 staff positions at the agency, and she was appointed to the role last July before she then relinquished the position in November. Only the Appointments Clause or the Vacancies Act exclusive structure may authorize service as a principal officer, U.S. District Judge Royce Lamberth said in his ruling, and Lake satisfies the requirements of neither the statute nor the Constitution. He leaned heavily on the recent ruling by the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, which ruled that the appointment of Alina Haba, Donald Trump's former personal lawyer, or current personal lawyer, to lead the U.S. Attorney's Office in New Jersey, that was invalid. If left standing, Judge Lamberth's decision would open the door to reversing a series of sweeping acts taken by Lake in trying to kill Voice of America and the other international networks that receive federal funding. Among the decisions taken under Lake's watch, well, dismissing all contractors, laying off almost all permanent network and agency full-time staffers, firing the director of Voice of America, striking a deal to carry content from the right-wing TV network One America News Network, withholding money from the sister networks like Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Asia, killing a lease for a new headquarters that previous agency leaders said would save the federal government tens of millions of dollars. She canceled that because the Trump administration cares so much about waste, fraud, and abuse. More recently, Lake has been accused of unlawfully turning Voice of America's few remaining broadcasts into a platform for pro-Trump propaganda, especially with regard to the conflict in Iran. Since its start in World War II, Voice of America has been intended and, in fact, has been mandated by law to serve as a demonstration of soft power around the world that models how U.S.-style journalism can incorporate dissent and unfavorable facts squarely into its reporting. It's barred from using the platform to circulate U.S. government propaganda, which is exactly what Carrie Lake has been doing. Not that the rule of law has ever stopped the Trump administration from, breaking it and breaking any damn laws they want. The federal government, the federally funded international broadcaster had until last year broadcast news in 49 languages, reaching countries where a free press is either under duress from authorities or not financially viable. It was down from 49 languages to just 6 in January, according to the agency. Because of all the layoffs that occurred under Lake, the agency was unable to fulfill even basic requests for financial information, according to an outside auditor that was hired by the U.S. State Department's Inspector General to perform a standard audit. They couldn't even get that done under Carrie Lake. Plaintiffs in the case, Voice of America's White House Bureau Chief Patsy Witakuswara, Jessica Jarriott, and Kate Knieper said that they felt, quote, vindicated and deeply grateful for the judge's ruling in the case. The judge's ruling that Carrie Lake's actions shall have no force or effect is a powerful step, they said, toward undoing the damage that she has inflicted on this American institution that we love, said the plaintiffs in their statement, adding, quote, even as we work through what this ruling means for colleagues harmed by her actions, it brings renewed hope and momentum to the next phase of our fight, restoring VOA's global operations and ensuring that we can continue to produce journalism, not propaganda, as they have for decades. Quote, today is a win in the fight against autocracy, said Sky Perryman, the president and CEO of the legal advocacy group Democracy Forward. They served as co-counsel for the plaintiffs. He added, quote, the decision is a powerful affirmation of the rule of law. For her part, in addition to calling the judge fat on social media, Carrie Lake, who has never been able to admit to losing anything, including her own 2 statewide election losses in Arizona, said in a statement, quote, we will appeal this outrageous ruling from an activist, D.C. District Court judge. The activist judge in this case is 82-year-old senior federal U.S. District Judge Royce Lamberth, originally appointed to the federal bench by Ronald Reagan in 1987. You know how those lefty Ronald Reagan radicals are, I guess, is what she's trying to say.
Yes, apparently, you know, when a judge actually reads the law, that's the worst possible thing you can do.
Thoughts, questions, objections, celebrations for any of that? Our number is 818-985-5735. As noted, it is among the brightest news that we may have to offer today, but we will take it where we can, especially since I see it as just the start of many more such findings by federal courts as our collective nightmares under this rogue fascist wannabe presidency continue and, yes, I believe, ultimately come to a crashing end. Speaking of illegality and, our war in Iran, since we last spoke late last week, U.S. military investigators, quote, believe it is likely that the U.S. was responsible for a deadly strike on a girls' school in southern Iran on the very first day of Trump's unprovoked war there a week ago this past Saturday. That, according to Reuters, citing 2 unnamed U.S. officials. The New York Times' own analysis indicates that the school building was severely damaged by a precision strike that occurred at the very same time as U.S. attacks on an adjacent naval base operated by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. More than 175 people were killed in that attack, many of them little girls. During a press avail aboard Air Force One late last week, when asked about the report, Trump claimed that Iran, not the U.S., was responsible for bombing their own school, apparently. When Trump's Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, who was standing behind the president on the plane, was asked by a reporter if that was true, Hegseth would say only, quote, we're certainly investigating. After which Trump again asserted it was Iran who done it. The U.S. sinking of the Iranian frigate RIS Dina has complicated relations with third countries. It has reportedly caused consternation back in India from where the ship was returning unarmed, according to the Iranians, after a joint military exercise that included U.S. participation. So we participated in military exercises with Iran, and then we bombed them. Nice. A U.S. submarine reportedly sank the Iranian warship with a torpedo, the first such use of a U.S. submarine since World War II. Israel launched a new assault on the Hezbollah stronghold in the southern Beirut late last week in its first reported combat deaths in this most recent Middle Eastern conflict. Israel announced that two soldiers were killed, as the overall death toll in Lebanon has now risen to nearly 400 people. The abrupt cancellation of a planned training exercise for the 82nd Airborne Division's headquarters fueled internal Pentagon speculation that the division's immediate response force could be deployed to the Middle East in what could become the first boots on the ground in the war, which still has no clearly defined purpose other than, well, serving as a distraction from many of Trump's own domestic woes and his flagging approval ratings as the critical midterm election season gets underway. Meanwhile, according to the Washington Post, a classified National Intelligence Council report warned that even a large-scale boots-on-the-ground U.S. assault on Iran would be unlikely to oust its entrenched military and clerical establishment. Doesn't, of course, mean that Trump won't do it anyway, or frankly, that he's even aware of the report from his own intelligence council, much less that he has read it. Over the weekend, Iran selected 56-year-old Mokhtaba Khamenei, the son of the assassinated 86-year-old now former Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, to be the nation's new leader. The younger Khamenei is considered to represent an even harder line faction of Iranian leadership than his father. In fact, the faction of the Iranian leadership who oversaw the assault on thousands, if not tens of thousands, of protesters recently in Iran, in which thousands were reportedly killed by government forces. So in killing the elder Khamenei, we may see an even harder line power structure take place in Iran, a leader from the very same family, but decades younger than the elderly cleric. So great job so far, Mr. Trump. You're really nailing it. A U.S. soldier died after sustaining injuries during an attack last week in Saudi Arabia, the military said, bringing the number of American troops now killed in the Iran war to seven. On Monday, the military identified the service member as Army Sergeant Benjamin N. Pennington, 26 years old, of Glendale, Kentucky. Pennington was injured in a retaliatory attack by Iran at Prince Sultan Air Base. He was assigned to a unit within the Army Space and Missile Defense Command and was said to have been seriously wounded at the scene of an attack on U.S. troops on March 1 as the war began, and he has now passed away. The news of the fallen service member came a day after the dignified transfer for the six soldiers who were killed last week in Kuwait. Wearing a white baseball cap with the letters USA in gold, a hat that is available for purchase, I believe, from Donald Trump's merchandise website, the President of the United States attended that ceremony at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware for the returning remains of those six U.S. service members killed in the Iranian drone strike in Kuwait. He failed to even remove his baseball cap during the ceremony, which was broadcast by, well, I think pretty much all of the cable news outlets, though Fox News showed a completely different dignified transfer ceremony instead of the one where Trump had his baseball hat on. One where Trump was not wearing a cap, with the fake news outlet claiming that later that showing the wrong footage there from an entirely different day and an entirely different ceremony from an entirely different conflict was due to just an editing error or something like that. Is that what they claim, Desi Doyen?
That is what they claim.
They could, couldn't hear you there.
Can you hear me now?
Nope, can't hear you. Oh, well. We'll call it an editing error. In any event, over the weekend, the State Department ordered American employees of the U.S. diplomatic mission in Saudi Arabia to leave the country. The mandatory departure of U.S. employees in the kingdom indicates, according to New York Times reporting, that senior diplomats are now bracing for a possible surge in violence in the war with Iran. And on Sunday, oil, which had been priced at around less than $60 a barrel, I believe, just weeks ago, jumped to more than $100 a barrel as the flow of shipping through the Strait of Hormuz slowed to a virtual stop. Oil prices continued again to soar on Monday morning for much of the day as the Iran war intensified, threatening production and shipping in the Middle East and straining supplies worldwide. The price of Brent crude at one point, the international benchmark, surged to almost $120 a barrel. It was 60 just weeks ago, doubling in just a couple of, well, really a week's time at this point, seeing its highest level since the summer after Russia invaded Ukraine 3 years ago, back in 2022. But those prices fell to under 100 later. I'm not sure where they ended up settling on Monday, but the White House was scrambling for new ideas on how to lower the surging global prices. Apparently, they found one when Donald Trump told a CBS White House correspondent, quote, "The war is very complete. Pretty much." Is that the quote he said, Des?
That is the quote that CBS reported, yes. That he just says it's very much complete, and suddenly the entire stock market took a deep breath and said, oh, okay, good.
Well, when has he not told the truth about things before?
Exactly.
Well, you know, why wouldn't we believe him? So, but the price increase, it was either way you look at it, prices for crude are still up anywhere from 36% to 42% than they were just before the U.S. and Israel launched their war against Iran back on February 28. The price increases are already being reflected at the gas pump here, where the national average is potentially expected to rise soon above $4 if the global price continues to increase. This after Trump had bragged falsely, but nonetheless, that the average of average cost of a gallon of gas was less than $2 under his leadership just weeks ago during the State of the Union. On Saturday, Trump downplayed the idea of turning to America's strategic petroleum reserve to try to bring down prices, maintaining that U.S. supplies are ample and that prices would soon fall. And again, when has he ever not told us the truth? So, you know, he says so I'll buy it. Yet the surge in costs for oil and natural gas is still pushing fuel prices higher, cascading through a whole range of industry from travel to household energy spending for consumers, all of which comes at a time when Trump was pretending to care about affordability for Americans. As the midterm election season heats up, you know, he only cares about that sort of thing when there's an election on, apparently, and when his approval ratings on the economy are dropping into the low 30s among Americans. The war in Iran, now in its second week, is ensnaring countries and infrastructure critical to the production and transportation of oil and gas worldwide. There's no end in sight. According to AP, Donald Trump apparently thinks it's very complete, so we're good. Fears of Iranian missile and drone attacks, meanwhile, have all but stopped tanker traffic from Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Iraq, Qatar, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, Iran, from traveling through the Strait of Hormuz. That's the narrow waterway off of Iran's coast, where a fifth of the world's oil and liquefied natural gas sails through on a typical day. That has all but stopped major oil producers in the region, like Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, UAE, have all cut production due to export constraints because they're running out of storage space. They can't move it out, and they got nowhere to put it. So they have to sort of stop drilling. Iran, Israel, and the U.S., meanwhile, have all struck oil and gas facilities since the war started, worsening the supply concerns. And it is not just oil and gas facilities and girls' schools. Civilian infrastructure like desalination plants in Bahrain are said to be coming under fire as well now, Desi Doyen? Desalination plants?
Yes. So to be clear, on Sunday, Bahrain accused Iran of indiscriminately attacking civilian targets, and that would include damaging one of its desalination plants. But Bahrain's Electricity and Water Authority said that their supplies remain online. Bahrain is home to the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet, so that made it a target, and it's among the countries that have been targeted by Iran. Now, Iran also said earlier that a U.S. airstrike had damaged one of its desalination plants on Keshem Island in the Strait of Hormuz. That cut the supply for water supply for 30 villages. So Iran's foreign minister warned that, hey, the U.S., quote, has set this precedent, not Iran.
Well, you know, these desalination plants do take a lot of energy. So I guess we don't have to use that energy to run them anymore if they get shut down. Never mind the fact that it's all in the middle of the desert and people need water.
Yeah. I mean, like for Kuwait, about 90% of their drinking water comes from desalination plants. Yeah. There was actually a CIA report back in 2010 during the Obama administration that examined the vulnerability of the Middle East and the Gulf of the Persian Gulf's desalination plants. That report found that attacks on desalination facilities could trigger national crises in several Gulf states, that prolonged outages would actually potentially trigger a big migration out of the Middle East, which would, you know, itself be a problem.
So yeah, there's all of that potentially ahead if Donald Trump turns out to be wrong about this war being, quote, very complete, pretty much. But there is plenty of money, apparently, for the U.S. for all of this, for war, for tax cuts for the rich, but still no money for you. Sorry. That's the effective outcome of Trump and the Republicans' choices since Donald Trump began his second term just over a year ago. We're now a little bit more than a year in, and Trump has pushed the U.S. into, once again, war again in the Middle East. He launched the war a little over a week ago, did not prepare or even warn the American people for it or of his intent to attack Iran and assassinate its leaders and why they were doing it. Well, just to replace them with younger, more hardline ones, apparently. He did it without seeking approval from Congress, without apparently a plan for the completely predictable retaliatory responses we are seeing from Iran in striking U.S. military bases, in missile attacks that have killed so far 7 U.S. troops, and the completely predictable response from Iran to effectively close the Strait of Hormuz, through which at least 20% of the world's oil and natural gas is transported. Trump launched his war on Iran without apparently any plan for what comes next for the Iranian people, for the American people, who are largely struggling right now already with high costs for housing and food and gas and childcare and health care. Democratic U.S. Senator Mark Warner of Virginia told the Financial Times that the Trump administration has given no indication that it had planned for any of this aftermath of its military campaign in Iran, telling the outlet, quote, I have never had from any of the briefings any description of what phase two would be of this war. At least one estimate calculates now that Trump's war on Iran is burning through nearly $1 billion a day, but Donald Trump says he's okay with the high cost of war. CNBC reports, quote, shortly after the global price of oil blasted past $100 a barrel at the open of trading on Sunday evening, Trump posted on Truth Social that a gain in, quote, short-term oil prices was, quote, a very small price to pay, to him anyway, I guess, for destroying Iran's nuclear threat. Only fools would think differently. Well, I could think of some fools who might think differently, who might believe that Iran's nuclear threat was already, quote, completely and totally obliterated just last June by the U.S., because that's what, yes, that fool Donald Trump has told us over and over and over again. But now we had to go in order to destroy Iran's nuclear threat. He told us it was obliterated. despite evidence to the contrary. He said as much just weeks ago, just last month, in his State of the Union address, right before he began this new foreign conflict in the Middle East. Trump made affordability a central plank back in 2024 for his campaign for the White House and in his State of the Union address just last month when he boasted about the administration keeping prices down, he lied. But now he's okay with, well, if they go up, so be it. That's a price he is willing to pay since he pays nothing, apparently, for his gas. In an interview with Reuters last week, he dismissed concerns about rising prices. He told the outlet, quote, "I don't have any concern about it," he said. "They'll drop very rapidly when this is over, and if they rise, they rise. But this is far more important than having gasoline prices go up a little bit, is it?" How do you feel about that? 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK if you are listening live today. All of which brings us back to warnings about all of this for decades and decades. Ignored warnings, I should add, for decades and decades, particularly about the financial costs of war. We can go all the way back to the days of Eisenhower's warning before leaving office of the military-industrial society. Before he gave those remarks as he was leaving office, Ike, the revered World War II general turned president, on April 16, 1953, just shy of 7 years after the end of World War II, he delivered a speech about the American before the American Society for Newspaper Editors. He issued warnings that we still do not seem to give a damn about minding, frankly. At least our leaders don't. At least Donald Trump this week certainly does not. Eisenhower's chance for peace speech in 1953, also known as the Cross of Iron speech, came shortly after the death of Soviet leader Joseph Stalin. In it, Eisenhower sought to present an alternative to the Cold War arms race that was then really heating up, presenting a choice between military buildup and investment in human welfare. Eisenhower contrasted what he characterized as the Soviet Union's post-World War II doctrine of force to what he considered, remember, a World War II hero, what he considered to be the United States doctrine to pursue peace and cooperation with the world.
Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. The cost of one modern heavy bomber is this: a modern brick school in more than 30 cities. It is 2 electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It is 2 fine, fully equipped hospitals. It is some 50 miles of concrete pavement. We pay for a single fighter plane with 500,000 bushels of wheat. We pay for a single destroyer with new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people. This is, I repeat, the best way of life to be found on the road the world has been taking. This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron.
So even if the war comes to some sort of end, if Donald Trump realizes that he's hurting his own party and his own approval ratings and decides, well, it's very, quote, very complete, pretty much over, as he suggested on Monday afternoon. Even if it were to end tomorrow, how many fine, fully equipped hospitals have we lost over the past week in this country? How many schools have we lost in this country? How much health care won't go to you in this country? Back in October, just 5 months ago, Democratic Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii made a key point about the choices that Donald Trump and congressional Republicans had been making since Donald Trump's return to office, as they slashed health care subsidies for tens of millions of Americans in order to help pay for another massive tax cut for corporations and the wealthiest Americans, and for, yes, another buildup of our military, both foreign and domestic.
This is not about money. There is enough money to bail out Argentina with $20 billion. There is enough money to purchase a brand new aircraft for $173 million for the Homeland Security Secretary. There is enough money to renovate the White House ballroom. What there's not enough money for under this Republican government is you. There's not enough money for you.
There's not enough money for you. If you need health care, there's not enough money for you. Need food? Not enough money for you. If you need electricity and gas and those prices go up because Trump's approval ratings have gone down and maybe a war will change his fortunes or at least distract you from the Epstein files and the allegations therein that he raped a 13-year-old girl, well, there's enough money for that war, but not enough for you. Got any thoughts on any of this today? Am I wrong? I know we got those Trump supporters out there who love to tweet me on the Twitters and email me after the show, bradcast@bradblog.com, but don't want to call in and make their case. I welcome you to do so now. 818-985-5735. Anything else that I haven't been able to get to today, but you know we'll try to get to on tomorrow's broadcast? Well, if you are in our live Southern California listening area, now is the time. 818-985-KPFK. I will try to get to, maybe a few more details on those Trump allegations. We will see. There's also, we'll save it because we may or may not get to it. Your calls on that or anything else over our public airwaves, use them before you lose them more than you already have. 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Taking your calls at 818-985-5735 on, well, pretty much anything you want to talk about. Let's get straight to those phone lines. Let's go to Niall in Los Angeles. Hey, Niall, welcome to The Bradcast. Hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for your show.
Thank you, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm laughing just listening to everything you have to say. It's just hilarious and it's so real that we can't get so angry anymore. We just laugh about it. I'm wondering, as an educator, you know, I've protested, I've called my representatives, and what do you honestly recommend? Like, the way I see it as a veteran, I served in the Army, I'm thinking, like, this is completely against the Constitution and everything that we stand for as a country. So what do we do at this point? I'm a little lost.
I think all of us are a little lost. So I would be lying to you if I told you I knew the right way to do any of this. As I've said many times on the show, I think we are all sort of making this up as we go along, especially in this country,
where we are not used to attempted fascist takeovers. Your protests, your writing, your calling your members of Congress, I think, is exactly the right thing to do. Your tuning into this station and trying to stay informed with so much misinformation out there, I believe, is also the right thing to do. But I will mention one other point that you made, Niall, which is you're laughing. And I think that's a good thing. I think one of the most potent weapons against wannabe dictators is ridicule and is laughing at them and letting them know you are not frightened by them. You are not scared by them. I know that a lot of people, it is scary what is going on. I totally get that. I totally understand that. But they want you to be afraid. They want you to be scared. They want you to be intimidated so it's easier to dominate you. Don't let that happen. Keep laughing, keep holding them up to ridicule, and, you know, we're going to take a lot of pain, as I've said, you know, come what may, over the next Lord knows how long he's going to be in office, but we've got to keep our spirits bright. We really do, and it's not just a, hey, you know, glass half full, everybody stay happy out there. I'm not trying to downplay how horrific and horrible all of this is. But we're going to be much more effective fighters against it if we keep in good spirits, it seems to me, Niall.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. And if so much is at stake, it's very dangerous not to stand up to it.
Yep.
So I think about my grandkids, and I hope we still have a country for them. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I think about your grandkids. I think about my grandparents. You know, who thought they were fleeing from this nonsense by coming here only to find how many years later this yutz in office who has no clue about the sacrifice of so many, really not all that long ago. They're constantly on my mind as well, Niall. Thanks for your call. Thank you for your service, sir. And, Des, you're waving at me.
Yeah, I just had one thing I wanted to add into that, which is that, you know, also a very important aspect of all of this is voting. I mean, the only way, as you've said before, the only way to really get out of this is through voting. And one of the things that you can do to actually help people locally, I mean, this is local impact, is to help other people get registered to vote, help them find out what kind of ID that they need to register and to vote, because that varies from state to state. And you can help them, too, get their voter ID if you need to.
Anything you can do. And I guess I talk so much about elections, I kind of forgot to mention them. So, yeah, I would actually put that up at the top of the list, along with staying in good spirits. But anything you can do, not only to vote in every election, but to help other people do it, to be a poll worker, poll watcher, give someone a ride, talk to them. Talk to them about what is going on. People are afraid, oh, I'm going to make an enemy if I tell them how I feel or what is actually going on. We've got to stay in contact with everybody. But yeah, democracy and elections, A number one. Thank you, Des. After firing you for some error last week, I'm going to give you a raise this week for
that. Yeah, and listen, there are all kinds of great organizations like the League of Women Voters and VoteWriters.org that they all, you know, you can find a local organization or a national one to help you figure out the steps forward to help people in your community vote.
Got that, Niall? Thank you, sir. No, we lost them long ago. 818-985-5735. Let's go to Al in Huntington Beach. Hey, Al, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
How you doing, Brad?
I'm hanging in there. You?
Yep, the same, man.
All right. Actually, I'm really, really tired. Even though I said how much I like daylight savings time, I'm exhausted, but not from daylight savings time, but just from staying up all weekend long with a super secret project that I can't talk about. But other than that, I'm
fine. Okay.
All right. What's on your mind, Al?
Do you know what the first technique of mind control is?
What is the first technique of mind control?
Sleep deprivation.
Damn it. They did it to me again. All right.
They did, man. Yeah. And you didn't even know it.
Didn't even know it. Thanks, Al.
Anyway.
Yeah, what's up?
On another note, man, there's a guy on YouTube, Danny Haifong. He did an interview with Scott Ritter. He was an ex-weapons inspector.
Right.
In Iraq,
yep.
And he breaks it all down. I mean, basically, they took out the THAAD system's radar, and they're blind, and that we're running out of missiles, and Iran is going to let it rain on basically all these Gulf countries and all our facilities and Israel.
Well, we will see. We talked a little bit about that last week in depth with Mideast historian, Middle Eastern expert Juan Cole, who said he too suspected this could be a short war, if only because it cost about $30,000 to make a drone. Iran is able to make 400 of them a day. Meanwhile, the missiles used to intercept it cost about $1.5 million.
Yeah.
And at that math, we're not going to be at it for long. He argued, we will see. Thanks, Al.
And we,
yeah.
They have to go to Diego Garcia to rearm these ships and
yeah.
missile batteries.
Yeah. Well, just wait for the boots on the ground. I'm sure it'll all work out very well. Thanks, Al. Appreciate the call. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Harold in Santa Barbara. Oh, Harold, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm fine, and thank you to all the callers. They really uplifted my spirit.
Good.
And, hey, Brad,
yeah.
if I mention your name, will I get a discount on one of those fancy hats he sells?
Oh, yeah, one of those MAGA hats? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just tell them I sent you. They're fans.
All right. Have a good one. Great show. Bye now.
Thank you, Harold. 818-985-KPFK, 818-985-5735. Let's stick with phones here. Jim in Long Beach. Hey, Jim, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks, Brad.
You bet.
I'm going to hear my own voice on this phone call, but I will try to talk through the echo.
Yeah, do your best. We're trying to make it as hard for you as possible. What do you have for us, Jim?
Well, yeah, throw on. I've got a point to make about, you know, all the suggestions are good, but I don't hear any imagination. I don't hear a real intense focus on supporting specific candidates in voting.
Yeah.
I contribute money on over the internet. I don't know if it's illegal for you guys to support specific people like Mark Kelly or all of these people in key races around the country. About encouraging people to give a few bucks to every single person running in a critical race, and then actually taking back. Now, whether we get to vote or not is another situation. Like calling your senators and so forth, they don't even answer the phone sometimes.
Yeah, but they know. They hear about the numbers. Calling your members of Congress is a good idea. By the way, that number, 202-224-3121, if you'd like to give them a piece of your mind. But your suggestion, support the politicians, support the people who are running for office with donations, the ones that you can get behind.
You're talking to me? Yeah.
Yeah.
How else are they going to win? So
well, we could vote for them in overwhelming numbers.
That's something to do.
Yeah, that is something to do. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate that call. Yeah, the other way is we could vote for them in overwhelming numbers, but they do need that support because the air war is not only going on over Iran, it's going on in this country. Republicans, corporate interests tend to outspend the small D Democrats by huge numbers. And, you know, I hate it. I wish we had no money in politics whatsoever. I think it has no place in politics whatsoever. But that is not the current system that we live in. But if we want to change that system, well, there's a lot of stuff that we have to do. 818-985-5735.
Hey, just real quick,
yes. You got another idea?
I accidentally hung up on Jim, so I do want to ask him to see if he can call back. Totally my fault. Sorry, Jim.
Sorry, Jim. We love you. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Marlene. Is it Marlene or Marlena in Valley Village?
Marlene.
Yes,
Marlene.
How are you, Marlene? But yeah.
What the hell? I'll take Marlena. What the hell?
All right.
you know, I was listening to Robert De Niro last night on MS Now for a minute.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, we all need to do what we can do. and you're talking about voting, and my dad served in World War II.
Yeah, I was trying to do the math there.
You understand.
All right. Yeah.
And so you have the wife and three kids, and I'm thinking, my God, what's happening in Gaza? I mean, he would be appalled at all this.
Yeah.
So my question is, because going back to saying do what you can do, I've been called to serve at the polls, and I will do that.
Nice.
But to me, it's like, I don't know, and I want to know what you think. I mean, they're having voting stations in synagogues.
That just
doesn't fit for me.
Look, I don't really have any particular problem with voting, whether it's in a church or a synagogue or a mosque, necessarily, as long as, you know, you don't have to walk in and cast your vote under a cross of Jesus up on the wall. I don't know. It doesn't bother me. Civic centers are better, but... First, thank you, by the way, for your service in serving at the polling places. That is huge. It would be nice if they were in civic centers, not in places of religion. But it's hard to find places to have these anymore, especially out here in Los Angeles. We've moved from this, local precinct system to a voting center system. I can't speak to it, but... You know, it doesn't trouble me as much. I'm more concerned about getting people to vote, period, than where they are doing it. But I hear you, and I think it's a valid concern, Marlene.
Here we were led into this by Israel and by Netanyahu and Trump, I understand. But now it just seems like it's crazy to me.
Anyway. I hear you. Okay.
Thank you.
I hear you, and I think you make a good point. Thanks for making it. Whether I'm fully with you or not doesn't actually matter. 818-985-5735. Let me go to Carlos in Thousand Oaks. Hey, Carlos, what's on your mind, sir?
Hello, yeah, I'm thinking about ways to create peace.
Yeah, got any? Did you come up with anything?
The reversible methanol fuel cell that... Dr. George A. Ola won the Nobel Prize for in 1994.
The reversible methanol fuel cell. Is that right?
Correct. It's a fuel cell. You can use renewable energy to power it.
Yeah.
And you can, in the process of getting the water for converting CO2 to fuel... You have to basically purify the water, so you're making drinking water, and you're making fuel, and you're also decarbonizing the atmosphere when you're making renewable fuel with a reversible methanol fuel cell.
Well,
or
yeah.
Other means.
Okay. All right. Well, I've got Desi Doyen is screening calls. She's sort of our go-to person for environmental issues and debunking. Des, have
yes.
you? Oh, she's off. Have you heard of reversible methanol fuel cells?
I have a vague recollection of those, and that might work. But one of the issues that you have with methanol is the energy conversion. When you burn it, you can lose a lot of heat in the burning of it. And also, if it's methanol, then that means I think that it still has carbon emissions.
Well, he's suggesting it's reversible, so I think maybe it's taking somehow methanol out of the air.
Okay.
Thanks, Carlos.
Well, I'm not sure. Sorry about that, Carlos. I'll look that up.
We will look that up. Thanks for putting it out there. And all of that would kind of help. Although, one of the points that I was hoping to get to, didn't have time for it because of the Kerry Lake being fired from Voice of America, is what's going on right now in China with battery-powered electric cars blowing us away. Hopefully, I will get to that tomorrow. While we are out at war over and over again, China ain't out at war. They're home frankly, if not saving the world, saving themselves with a new battery that is they're putting out in a car that they're selling for about $10,000 that goes about 600 miles. What are we doing? We're doing the exact reverse of that.
You mean 600 miles on a single charge, not just 600
Not total.
Miles.
It does. It has to go and then stop. At that price, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. Only $10,000. It only goes 600 miles. No, that, yeah. So we will try to get to that. It's just mind-blowing what they are doing compared to what we are doing, not only wasting money on stupid wars for no particular reason, but the fact that, you know, Donald Trump is gutting all of this research and development, gutting the incentives that were in place for electric cars, renewable energy, and we are just getting lapped. And by the time this Donald Trump nightmare is over and we have the time to peek our heads up and look around and see how we have lost ground, I think there's going to be, or at least there should be, hell to pay. Do I have another very quickly? Everybody's got to go fast. Now, I could try to get to as many as I can here. Let me get to Robert in Van Nuys. Hey, Robert, welcome to the broadcast, sir. What's on your mind?
I just want to say that I think the war on Iran is to prevent Iran from having the wherewithal, having the resources to continue to support the resistance in the against the apartheid regime in Palestine and the resistance in Lebanon and the Houthis and other smaller groups in the area.
Well, that's not a bad theory because, you know, Donald Trump has got a Gaza Riviera to build. But the problem is, if that was the purpose, it appears to be failing because they're putting in a harder line guy in the place of the previous Ayatollah. So if that was the purpose, they got a funny way of showing that. Robert, I got to move on very quickly here. I've got just a second. Let me get to Roger very quick. Hey, Roger up in Minneapolis, sir. Sorry to have to short shrift you today. I'll give you about 15, 30 seconds if you want it.
I'll do my best. I'll do my best Morris for you.
He's coming up too if you hurry. Yeah, go ahead.
Professor Rogers' vocabulary word of the era. Kakistocracy. K-A-K-I. That means the rule on the part of the worst people in a society.
My understanding was it meant rule by thieves.
That's kleptocracy.
Oh, okay. You're right. Okay, kakistocracy then. We learn something every day. Thank you, Roger. Good to hear from you. Hope spring has sprung. I understand ice is out the actual frozen ice on the lake is out up there in Minneapolis at this point. Morris, give us your best 20 seconds, sir. Oh, Mo.
Can you hear me, Bradley?
I can. Go. 15 seconds now.
Texas, when they did the remapping, it backfired, didn't it? Americans are fed up with this stuff.
We will see. I'm not willing to say it backfired just yet, but we will find out. Thanks, Mo. Good to hear from you, my friend. Good to hear from everyone. Apologies to those I couldn't get to today. Thanks to our board operator, Will, today, as well as Desi Doyen, our producer, and all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, I am The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.